Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime Event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a MyLowe's Rewards or a MyLowe's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime Event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it is refreshing!
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Thank you, George, and pretty fancy hat you have there. Whoa.
Stanley Cup champions.
Aha. Uh-huh. And Stanley Cup on the back of it, too, huh? Snazzy. Folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. If you have questions, concerns, or comments about your yard, your landscape, your house plants, or whatever, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday morning, we get together and we have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard. What's going on in that front yard? Why is right along the street? It's always burnt. It's so hot. What's going on? Your side yards, specialty garden space, a taste of the tropics, your house plants. What is a potting mix versus potting soil? How to improve your soil to have better plant material growing in your landscape? Shearing, pruning, removal, bugs and diseases. Well, we don't have the swarm of grasshoppers like they have in Las Vegas, but those are specialty grasshoppers that live in the desert. Wow. Using information, well, that will help you make decisions. My thoughts and orchestrations will hopefully open and solidify your options, with the final judgment on the action you're going to take is going to be yours. Remember, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you having me in your home, your car, or wherever you happen to be listening. A very important part of this show is Alex. Alex is producing, so when you call, just give him your name and where you're calling from. He doesn't need to know what you're calling about or anything else. And Alex is now the permanent producer for the Garden Hotline, so we welcome him. We didn't know if it was going to happen, but obviously it did. I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations on the internet as well. And I used to write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. But unfortunately, the publisher of the Missouri Gardener magazine, he did several across the United States in various states. He's had some medical problems, so he's going to have to shut down. So I'm no longer writing articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. I had fun with those. I tried, you know, I did some kind of really cool, nutty stuff. But anyway, and during the week, I do landscape consulting, where I come to your home and do a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home to do a walk and talk, which can be problem solving, evaluation of aesthetics, and everything else, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. Homepage has my email and phone number where I can be reached. And today's Good Gardening Stroll, no, the walk and talk is going to be actually right across the street from the Botanical Gardens on Flora Place. So if the Good Gardening Stroll today, though, is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I was headed down Gravois, heading north, And I thought, that looks kind of interesting. So at the corner of Junietta, which I don't know why we pronounce it Junietta, Minnesota, and Gravois, the fire hydrants are painted to resemble the St. Louis City flag. There's two red maples as street trees across from the space. And the planted wedge surrounded by recently mowed lawn. A bench waits for anyone, especially those waiting for a bus to head eastward towards downtown. There's some great looking pale blue cat mint. And it really looks nice. It's not quite cascading over the walls that surround this raised bed area, but pretty darn close. And there's a nice cool breeze, just like the color of this cat mint. The cool breeze this morning was really moving some flags around very, very nicely. It kind of looked like looked like it was coming out of the south, but it felt too cool, but obviously it was. There was also some Asiatic lilies. They'd finished blooming probably a month or so ago. Foliage looks good, the stems look good, but the flowers, you can see where the flowers used to be. The stamens are still erect and standing there as well. They're saying it's summertime. And once massive knockout roses had been cut back severely, but they're in a nice state of recovery. And between the six knockout roses, there's probably several hundred flowers right now. A clump of classic flag iris, they'd finished and they're getting sleepy. They're turning yellowish brown, so it's time to be cut back if you would prefer to do it to your own iris or to these. Landscape fabric and mulch complete the bed. A building in the background says Planing, P-L-A-I-N-I-N-G, Planing Mill Company, established in 1893. Wow, what great history. The American flag, as I said before, was waving, and the sky has really had a real nice look. The blue and the clouds almost look like powdered sugar. So anyway, it was time to head towards KMOX. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, and 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, comments, or concerns? Alex, where are we headed?
To Collinsville and talk to Keith.
All right. Hi, Keith.
Mike, two words, Bermuda grass.
Aha.
Does anybody out there know how to get rid of it permanently?
It's a tough one. There's basically any kind of, let's say, invasive plant of that kind of quality is going to take multiple years to get rid of it. But you're going to probably use just a grass killer if you want. If you prefer not to use Roundup, you're just going to have to stay on top of it, and may take a couple years to finally eradicate it entirely. But once it's established, it is really brutal.
The service that I use called me up the other day and said, hey, we'll be out to aerate your yard tomorrow. And I said, do not aerate my yard, because I think what you're going to do is make that Bermuda grass spread.
Well, that's not really going to be the case necessarily. But, your ground needs to breathe. So, consequently, the area maybe where your Bermuda grass isn't growing, where you have normal type lawn, but I would say I would core aerate personally, even with the Bermuda grass. Why doesn't the lawn company that's taking care of this, get rid of the Bermuda?
Well, they came to me. They said they have a product called Pilex.
Okay.
It's very expensive, and they measure it with eyedroppers, and they put it on the yard, and it's three applications during the heat of the summer.
Okay.
And they do it for 3 years, and there's no guarantee.
Right.
They did it for the first year, and they did it once this year, and then they said, we're no longer going to do Pilex because even Pilex has changed their approach to this product. Now, I have neighbors in the same area here who have gotten rid of theirs, and I asked them who they used, and this company that they used to get rid of the Bermuda grass, they sold out to, I'm not going to even mention the name of the company, but they sold out to them, and I'm not real happy with this company because I don't think they're doing a real good job. I went online, and this lady says if you take Bermuda grass is in layers, and you have to work in conjunction with the Pilex, and you have to mow really low.
Right.
And she also suggested to take plastic and put plastic over the area where the Bermuda grass is and let the sun burn it and then do that. And I tried that, and then I burned it off, and then I took a shop vac, and I got all those runners, those cotyledons, I think they call them.
Yeah.
And I aerated, I seeded, I strawed, and by Halloween I had a beautiful lawn, but the Bermuda grass came back.
Right.
My wife says just look up. Don't look down.
Exactly. Stay away from the areas that really cause a real problem. So just, it's brutal. There's no getting around it. That's why golf courses use it for putting greens.
Right. Well, if anybody out there knows of some way and call in and say how they got rid of it, I'd appreciate hearing it.
What part of town do you live in?
I live in Collinsville.
Oh, that's right.
And the house was built 20 years ago, and where the house sits, it was woods. But where the yard is, it was basically prairie.
Ah.
And so that prairie has gone, has been there for thousands and thousands of years, dogs, cats, birds can bring that in, Bermuda grass, into your yard, too.
Absolutely, right.
And I'm like, I don't know, unless I could do a hybrid, make the whole yard Bermuda grass and make it a hybrid, I'd go for that.
That's true. And put in a couple flags and do some putting.
There you go. Well, thanks for your show.
Certainly. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Okay, Kevin, go down Highway 55 to Cape Girardeau and talk to Pat.
Whoa, Cape Girardeau.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question. I've got, like a lot of gardeners, I've got a small spot designated for vegetables that I can't move anywhere else. And I know this year's unusual with the heavy rain and the heat, but I really need to try to eradicate this blight in my soil because it's killing my tomatoes. Have you ever had any experience with these biofumigant mustard plants, seeds that you put in, let it grow up, and then till it back into the soil?
No, I haven't had any personal experience with that. I have not.
Do you think it would work for blight? It says it works with funguses.
Well, why don't you try some horticultural vinegar and things like that? There's several organic products that you could actually use.
Okay. Horticultural vinegar.
Yeah, I recommend that for, all kinds of different problems. But, many of the garden centers that are year-round garden centers should have that, or you can go online and just check it out.
Do you treat the plant or treat the soil?
You treat the soil. Treating the fungus problem is not necessary. If your plants are healthy, you're buying them at a regular garden center, and they're ones that's have the VFN after the name of the plant, whether it's Better Boy, stuff.
Yeah, I prefer the heirlooms, which have no disease resistance.
Oh, yeah. See, they're more prone to disease problems. That's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
That's why all these have been hybridized. I understand the heirlooms have a much better taste, from my perspective. The other ones kind of taste less, I don't want to say manufactured, but somewhat manufactured.
Still right.
So
yeah.
What I would probably do is just not plant for 1 year, turn this soil over, add some compost to it, and just kind of let it sort of take care of itself. And then, 1 year with no tomatoes at all, no vegetables in this spot, and then try it the following year and see what happens.
Okay. I have had luck with Bermuda in my daylily bed using post.
Oh, okay.
And it didn't harm the daylilies, but it was very effective.
That's kind of, surprising because in a way, because the daylilies are kind of in the grass family, that it wouldn't impact your daylilies at the same time as getting rid of the Bermuda. But
yeah,
that's nice to know. So post, POST?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Well, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, now we're going to head over to Edwardsville and talk to Rick.
All right, back across the river. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I have a question about a suggestion for planting. This one section of my house is like Death Valley. I can't get anything to grow there. And the problem is, I think it's kind of twofold. I have 32-inch eaves that hang over this spot, and it faces west. and it gets the heat of the afternoon, and it's also on a slope, so it gets very little rain. I can't get anything to grow there.
How about
you? Any suggestions?
Yeah, try any of the sedums, S-E-D-U-M-S.
Okay.
I mean, there's
is
sedum.
That like a-
there's, I mean, they're in the cactus family, only they don't have thorns. So
okay.
They're very drought tolerant. They're very tough. There's multiple varieties. There's sedum autumn joy. There's sedum dragon's blood. There's sedum acre. I would look at that variety of plants.
Okay. Do they grow tall? Are they like ground?
Some of them grow pretty flat on the ground. Some of them get about 6 inches. Some of them get about 8 inches.
And do they flower?
Yeah. They all flower.
Oh. Okay. All right. And then just one other real quick question. Every year, every spring, religiously, the first time I see the very first bud on a forsythia plant, is it the forsythia that comes out and I put down the crabgrass preventer?
Yeah, the pre-emergent, correct.
Yeah, religiously, I put that down every year, and this time of year, I get weeds. Should I be putting something else down, like, you know, middle of June, or, you know, something to prevent the hot summer weeds coming through?
Well, the summer weeds, the warm season weeds, they're the ones that germinate, you know, that you're trying to kill in the early spring. So when
okay.
you're putting, maybe wait a little bit longer to put down the pre-emergent. Wait until the forsythia is in complete flower as opposed just to start to showing a little bit of yellow.
Okay. So, and then the fall season, just refresh my memory. I listen to you every week. The fall season, pre-emergent would go down
mid to late August.
Okay, all right.
So
okay,
twice a year, and it's, you know, I mean, it's a battle. There's no getting around it. And these products are great, and they, you know, they work. But a lot of times they're not necessarily going to be 100%, and especially on years when, you know, we have extreme amounts of rainfall and all those other natural type things that Mother Nature sends us, it can impact what's going to, you know, the effectiveness
right.
of anything.
Would it have hurt to put down, like, with all the heavy rain to, you know, a couple after 2-3 weeks of putting it down the first time?
I wouldn't do it that soon. Maybe a month later.
Okay. All right. I'll give that a try next year, maybe, if it's raining.
Great. Well, good luck. Yeah, weeds are tough.
Ahead. Yeah.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Where are we headed, Alex?
To Shiloh to talk to Chuck.
All right. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
To my fellow warrior in Collinsville about the Bermuda grass.
Aha.
I'm in Shiloh. Lived in my house for 21 years. I'm on about 0.7 acres, so nothing huge, and I'm one of these lawn freaks. I've tried every single product on the market, Post, you name it, the stuff that's available at the big box stores, and I don't apply it in a hose end type sprayer. I actually load it into a pump sprayer, so I'm concentrating my attack on the grass itself, not
right.
a wide swath. And this is my 21st summer, and I cannot. Get rid of it.
Nothing's better than a testimonial situation like that. It is brutal. There's no getting around it.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I got a sprinkler system. I do my own lawn care. I don't let anybody touch it. The birds, whatever, they keep bringing it in. I'm looking at it now, and in the morning when the dew is on the grass, the Bermuda is a different color when it's wet.
Right.
Based on my fescue blend, and it's just, somebody's got to lock me up. I'm in a straitjacket.
It is, I mean, there's no getting around it. It is very, very extremely tough, for sure.
I mean, if there are people out there who have controlled it, good on you, but it's impossible. I just, I've learned to live with it, and I just treat it every year, and I keep it to a minimum.
Right. Well, that's about, I mean, that's, you have a great philosophy, for sure, to be honest. Because a lot of times, you know, we as people, as humans, bang our head against the wall over and over and over again, not just necessarily about Bermuda, about many different things. And in the end, you know, all we have is a real bad headache as a result of banging our head.
Yeah, the lawn is flat. I don't have extreme sun. I don't have extreme shade, but we just deal with it. And if I keep it to a minimum, and if I don't squint real hard, then I think I'm doing okay.
Well, that sounds great. Well, thanks for the insight. Appreciate it.
Okay, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I was at a house, you know, this past Wednesday out in Augusta, and they were talking to me about some of the plant material. We're doing some evaluations and things along that line. And I said, you know, in reality, what we're looking at is you're never going to have a landscape, whether it's lawn, whether it's trees, whether it's shrubs, whether it's perennials or anything else, that looks like a catalog. There's going to be some natural things that happen, and they can be different every year. But it is just, I mean, our whole attitude, we want picture perfect. And there's not picture perfect in this region. It just can't happen.
All right, Jan in Brentwood.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Very good.
Okay, just a question about, not knockout roses this time, but white spirea bush. I have like four together. They're 8 to 10 foot tall, about 60 years old. They flower real nice on the top in the spring, but it's all like sticks at the bottom. So
right.
When do I send out... And when do I send out and when do I fertilize so I get more growth down below, more flowers?
Basically, what it is since they're, you know, the spireas grow like an umbrella. So in other words, the areas down below are not getting any sun. That's why, and probably the age-wise, you know, of your shrubs affects the bud situation as far as flowers. You're really never going to get any flowers at the base, regardless of what you do. I mean, you could cut it all down to the ground, and it would take multiple years to finally get back to starting to create anything. How much space, extra space, do you have, you know, in this area where the spirea are growing?
The part that flowers?
No, just...
extra space.
Yeah.
They're kind of like the whole side of the yard. They're, side, you know, on top of each other going across, like four or five... Big bushes.
Okay.
There's really not a lot of space between it. Nothing between.
How about in front?
In front, yeah. And there's a fence about 2 feet back, but in front I've got room.
Okay, what I would do then is, you know, rather than trying to prune and get this thing and try to get these buds going, because you're just going to be spinning your wheels, I would just buy some new spireas, same variety, and where you're where the ones that you have run across, make it a zigzag with the new ones in front, kind of in between the ones that you know, are existing. And then consequently, the new ones are going to have the flowers in the lower area and then hide in sort of the naked part.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Well, when should I cut the existing ones? Does it help to thin out all those sticks or just thin out the bush itself?
Well, it will help a little bit, but you're still not going to get the
right
flower buds at the bottom, regardless of what you do.
And okay, now what about cutting them down? And should I be doing that, or what time of the year should I be doing that?
So you don't screw up the flowering that you do get, even if it's at the very top. You've got about 2 months or so after they finish flowering to do the pruning that you're going to do. After that, you can mess it up where anything that you prune, you may not have any flowers even on the top part of the plant that you're discussing right now.
Okay, so I've already passed that.
Right.
2 months, I think. So 2 months after they've flowered, then I can go down. If they're 8 to 10 feet, how far could I bring them down?
Well, you know, I never like to take down more than like 20% at the most.
No more than 20%. Okay. And then the idea of putting new ones toward the bottom to give the hole.
Right, to make it look full. That's going to be the easiest, most logical thing to do.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your help.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, now we're going to go talk to Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling today about raspberry bushes. I had good memories of picking raspberries as a child with my grandparents and thought I'd put some in. So in 2018, I bought some two-year-old bushes. This year, with our weather being more like the Pacific Northwest, they grew amazingly. So now the canes that bore don't look too good, and I have all sorts of big, tall, new green canes. What do I do at this point?
If they're only 2 years old, I would leave the canes, even if you say the ones that bore fruit, you know, are looking a little bit, you know, stressed out. You know, when the canes start to get bigger, when they probably hit, let's say, the 3 or 4 year mark, those larger canes can be cut basically back down to the ground. But right now, I'd leave everything as it is because you're trying to create a colony. And by leaving as many canes as you can, and the foliage and everything else, that's going to help the sort of the colonizing aspect or factor.
Okay. Do you have any other advice for what to do? I mean, it seems like I should be doing something. They're doing everything on their own.
That's a problem.
Well.
You know, raspberries, black raspberries and everything else, they grow naturally here. So you don't necessarily need to be doing something this time of year. Now, next year, maybe some organic type fertilizers, you know, that type of thing, right when the new growth is beginning. And then going into wintertime, maybe 2 to 3 inches of mulch, you know, around all the canes. But other than that, I'd keep it as simple as possible.
Okay. All right. One other question. I have a 20-year-old tulip poplar tree in the front yard, and every year about this time it starts dropping dry brown leaves. The tree looks healthy, but it just drops brown leaves. Nobody else has brown leaves in their trees. Is there anything I can do about it?
Nope. River birch are doing it. Several trees do it in the, you know, in the sort of the heat of the summertime. And it's just they don't have, you know, let's say even a 20-year-old tree doesn't have an adequate root system to bring in as much moisture as needed to keep all the foliage looking good. So the tree just sloughs them off just from an overall health standpoint.
Great. I didn't know that when I planted it.
Right. A lot of people don't don't look at sort of the, I don't want to say the downside, but some of the problems.
Yeah.
But you can go to the botanical garden and check out the tulip trees, and you'll see exactly what's happening. And your yard happens right there where they have people working on them or working in the grounds 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, you know, 7 days a week.
Okay. Well, it's a healthy tree otherwise. So.
Yeah, just.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. Yeah, it's just one of those kind of things you just can't do much about. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
All right, let's head to Eureka and talk to Jim.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Hey, thank you for your show. Thank you for your military service. I've got two quick questions. I put sod in this spring. I got lucky with the rain, but now I'm looking at the fall. Can I overseed that a little bit with some bluegrass? I mean, it's looking good. It's fescue. And then my second question is, I've got mature trees, and I want to cut some of the lower limbs. And is it okay to prune them this time of year? I just want to cut them, you know, 10, 12 feet off the ground so we can get a little more sun around the base of these trees for the sod.
Okay. Well, to be honest with you, the shade is really important related to having a successful lawn. But also understand that the tree roots are really a major competition for any kind of lawn. So, yes, allowing more sun to hit the ground will help, but it's not going to necessarily eradicate the problems that you just have by the fact that you're trying to grow a lawn in conjunction with trees. I mean, that's not a combination. You go into the woods, you go into the forest, you just don't see any kind of things that look like lawn in those certain, you know, scenarios. But as now, if you have a fescue lawn from the side, why would you want to put bluegrass on top of that?
Well, I didn't know. I just, it looks good. So should I seed more this this fall, it looks good right now.
Yeah, you have no problem seeding. But I'm asking, why don't you use a fescue seed as opposed to a bluegrass seed?
Okay, so the fescue, it's already fescue, and it does better anyway. It's more drought resistant, right?
Right, exactly. And, a lot of times the sod farms will have, when you buy, let's say, fescue sod, it'll be 90%, let's say, fescue, but it'll be 10% bluegrass because fescue is a clump grower. And so consequently, it doesn't weave together. So they put the bluegrass in with it to weave, but you're not cutting this, you know, to be sod, to be sold or something, or to be moved to another part of your landscape. So I would say stay with a fescue blend seed. You can overseed, but probably what I would do before I overseed is, you know, get somebody to come in or rent one yourself, a core aerator, put the core aerator, run it, get all the plugs taken up out of the ground. Then put some compost down, and then put some seed down. Or you can put the seed down before the compost. Your compost, you only want about a half inch or so.
Sounds great. You can put a half inch of compost on top of the sod.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. What you're doing is after you core aerate, then the compost will fall down into the holes. But also, it doesn't necessarily have to fall in the holes. So you're just kind of surface feeding with an organic, let's say, product when you're using the compost.
Excellent. Thank you, Mike.
Certainly.
All right, let's head over to Arnold and talk to Bob.
Hello, Bob.
All right, let's try Reuben and Godfrey.
All right. Reuben, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for your show. I live over in Godfrey, adjacent to the Olin Nature Preserve.
Ah.
About 600, you know the area?
Right.
Okay, so my property is adjacent to that. I have 9 acres, about 7 acres in woods, and 2 acres that I cut. I have about a million questions, and I'll go to these two. When it comes to, I'm trying to clear the honeysuckle out of my woods. I started by hand, and I decided that was a bad idea, but I've been using Tordon to paint the stalks. I finally decided I have all these piles that I need to get rid of. I didn't know whether burning or bringing in a bobcat with some sort of a mower in front would be the best way to go, and whether or not Tordon is worth the time.
Well, you know, the Tordon, you could do that, or you can use, unless you're just anti-glyphosate, in other words, Roundup for killing poison ivy, or Roundup, for, you know, what that will do will kill the woody plants. So you cut them. Then you just paint the, you know, whatever herbicide, you know, or brush killer that you're using, paint it right on the open wound. Make the cut at about a 45-degree angle so you can get more of the herbicide in there. So just don't spray it on the foliage or anything. Cut, you know, and leave about a 3-foot, you know, stump or trunk or whatever for these shrubs, and then paint the herbicide right on that open wound.
Is there a reason why you leave a 3-foot rather than just cutting it off at the ground?
Well, you know, you can cut it as low as you want to, but a lot of times it's just easier at 3 feet. You can make it 2 feet, you can make it 1 foot. I wouldn't cut it necessarily right at ground level, but, you know, if you want to do that, that's fine.
Okay.
The reason why I say leave it a little bit longer, because even though this stuff really, really works pretty well, it's not necessarily going to kill it entirely. Then the next time that you need to do an application, you would cut another foot off that 3-foot stump.
Ah, okay, cool. So the 2 acres of grass I try to maintain, and, you know, it's virtually impossible. I heard your earlier caller, but I'm trying to do this with 2 acres rather than a smaller area.
Sure.
My neighbor and I use our four-wheelers, and we use a tank, and we spray some sort of a weed killer, and then we come back with fertilizer. My neighbor went on YouTube and found this product called Tenacity, and the application, it was really like 1 ounce to 2 gallons, or it was very small, 1 teaspoon to 2 gallons, but they also recommended the use of a surfactant plus a dye. And it kind of scared me because they said put it on a very thin application. Don't put it on too thick. And it just kind of worried me. But I just wondered what your thoughts were on Tenacity or any other better product to try to maintain weed control on a large piece of property.
Well, the dye is there so you know where you've sprayed. So, in other words, because they don't want you to overspray because it could do some major damage. So that's why the dye's in there. And, you know, the other things are just, you know, to make it adhere, to make it stick to where you're spraying. But it's, you know, it's kind of a personal choice as much as anything. You have a very, very, as you know, difficult circumstance to try to have a successful lawn, especially this large in this region where you've probably already cleared out these spots or somebody has in the past. Now, I don't know if this is all open lawn or if you have mixed in trees or other things like that. But all
quite a bit of mixed in trees, yeah.
Yeah. See, I mean, that's just that makes a totally successful lawn very, very difficult.
All right. My final question, Mike. I have a ton of large pin oaks on my property, and they have very low drooping branches. I've heard that maybe I'm wrong that you could damage the trees by removing those lower branches. Is that true or not?
No, that's not true. And basically anything that's deciduous type tree, like oaks and maples and everything else, you can prune those actually in the summertime right now. So,
okay.
I mean, if you can limit up, but just make sure when you limit up, you leave the last cut, just leaving a stub on the trunk or the next biggest branch that is coming off of. About a quarter to a half inch. Don't leave like a 6 foot stub. So if it's a long branch, cut it off in sections with the final cut, leaving a half inch stub.
Just a half inch stub?
Right.
And do you need to use any sort of a pruning paint or anything on those?
No, none of that stuff does anything except cosmetics anymore. It used to have lead in it, which would help with bacteria and viruses, but now it doesn't do anything.
Okay, and like I said, final question, I'll ask one quick one. Cutting. I tend to cut very high. I mean, is that in general a good idea to cut high?
Doesn't really make all that much difference. But
okay. Well, hey, thank you very much, yeah. Mike. I love your show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Yes, folks, we got another hour, and it's the tip of the trowel hour. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, and we have some new information on goats in the next hour.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Thank you, George. And folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour. And I'll be giving you the tip of the trowel really shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. We certainly appreciate your insight. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. And if you were not there, I wouldn't be here. So we can discuss plant selection, the ups and downs, annuals. I've got some begonias that have gotten so huge that I've got them in a window box in a window. I'm afraid that they're going to flip off the edge of the window ledge. So today I'm going to have to take that window box down and replace it with something not quite as wild as these begonias. I've been very impressed with this variety of begonias. So anyway, I believe I got those at Daniel's Farm. And that was one of the places I broadcast a remote broadcast earlier in the year. How about your bulbs, your cannas and your caladiums and your elephant ears and all that other stuff? They should be massive. The dichotomy of certain things, I've got a lot of people in my neighborhood, even though it's in the city and stuff, do grow a lot of edibles. There is one gentleman that lives across the street from me and, at Diagonal. He's had great success for years, ever since we lived in South City, growing tomatoes. This year he has had, he said, I've given up. He's put in three different crops, and they just didn't go, where he wanted them to. But, two blocks away, there is a house that has tomatoes that are probably as tall as I am almost, which is filled with fruit. So it's just, it's a real difficult world out there. How about the ground covers? How about houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens? I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Alex is running the board, the big board across this way from where I am. And during the week, I do what I call walk and talks, where I come to your home and answer the questions that you have related to anything that's in your landscape, and then also keep my eyes open for things that may be impacting your landscape that you did not consider. As I said in the first hour, today after the show, I'm headed over by the Botanical Garden on Flora Place and take a look at, they're really worried about their lawn. That's what we're going to concentrate on, but we're going to look at other things as well. I come to your home for the walk and talk and share 40 years of experience as it relates to your Homes Landscape Design. Tip of the trowel, a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to, you look, trying to think of something maybe that you have never done before or something that's kind of unusual. Well, the Missouri Botanical Garden hosts the largest succulent event in the Midwest. The Henry Shaw Cactus and Succulent Society has their show and sale today and Sunday. And way back when I worked at the Botanical Garden, I was actually a judge for the Henry Shaw Cactus Society's show. And what we did is we evaluated the plant materials for the difficulty of growing and things along that line, how well they looked. And so that's, you know, and I have been probably, you know, cactus and succulents are the probably the plant material that I started getting involved with way back when. When I left Riverside in the Air Force, when I got discharged, I moved down to San Diego. I had a great aunt that lived there, Aunt Cecil. And Aunt Cecil was a cactus and succulent expert there. She lived in Pacific Beach, which is in the San Diego area. And she opened my eyes to this type of plant material that I never had exposure to before. So that was kind of the opening door, opened the door for me to end up where I actually ended up. But today, 9 to 5, again, the Henry Shaw Cactus and Succulent Society show and sale. So you can head down to the Botanical Garden. You'll be amazed. You think, well, cactus and succulents, those are boring. No, they're not really boring at all. So you can go to www.hs, meaning henryshawcactus.org/show, or you can call 314-577-5100 for more information. So if you can't make it today, head down there tomorrow. You'll have great fun, you know, looking at all these different things. You can certainly buy some and just enjoy. You'll be amazed at all the different type of things that people do grow cactus and succulent-wise. And finally, the tip of the trowel goes out to, I don't know if you've been listening the last couple of weeks, but we've had the Goats on the Run. Is that what it is? Goats on the
Goats
Run?
On the Go.
Oh, Goats on the Go. Well, Goats on the Go, was, we found out that they do eat poison ivy. So if you want to control poison ivy, you can bring, I guess you have this herd of goats that you bring into your landscape, and they eat the poison ivy. But then again, you have to realize they don't dig down and get the roots out or anything else. So there needs to be something else. Well, I decided I may give up on the garden hotline because I have found something related to goats that might be a way that I can make myself rich, like really, really rich. There is some goats in Morocco. And Morocco, you know, where is Morocco? That's Africa, right? Yes, it is. But anyway, these goats, they climb into trees. So you can go online and look at the Moroccan goats, and you'll see pictures of like four or five or six goats climb into these trees. Now, they're climbing into the Moroccan ironwood. And what I'm planning to do is I'm going to send something to President Trump directly, and see if I can bring these immigrant goats into the country, and I'm going to teach these goats not necessarily just to climb the trees. I'm going to teach these goats to prune the trees when they're up in the trees. So that's, you know, hopefully I can get this whole thing to fit together, and maybe I have to kiss the garden hotline goodbye because I'm going to have Moroccan goats that I'm going to use as tree pruners. So can you imagine that? So again, if you just want to see something a little bit unusual, check out the Moroccan goats as they climb into trees. I mean, it's like, whoo, anyway. And they actually, it's just unbelievable. So hopefully it'll work out. Hopefully President Trump will allow me to bring in some immigrant goats. Anyway, enough of that crazy stuff. So if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Want to do a call, Alex?
Yeah, we'll talk to Connie in Fairview.
Hi, Connie.
Hi, Mike. I have a story to share with you about my mother's spirea bushes.
Uh-huh.
And you might be able to employ your Moroccan goats on these, too. This might, you might be able to branch out to shrubs with your idea. My mother, and I'm calling because I thought this story might help that other lady that called about spirea bushes. My mother had a big row of spireas in front of her house at the street, and they were just gorgeous. They would cascade over and just bloom like crazy, but they got to the point where they were so big you could hardly see my mother's little one-story house from the street.
Mm-hmm.
So one spring, I went over to visit Mom, and to my horror, she had chopped them all down to about a foot off the ground. And I'm like, Mother, what have you done? And she said, just wait, you'll see. Well, Mike, I'll tell you what, her shrubs were not 50 years old, but they were probably at least 30. Those shrubs, the first year, they didn't look so good, but the second spring, oh my gosh, Mike, those shrubs just bloomed and they were just gorgeous. Now, it's called a rejuvenation pruning. You're probably familiar with that.
Right.
And that lady, she might want to try that before she goes out and invests a bunch of money in new shrubs. At 50 years old, it might not work, but then again, it might.
Yeah, it never hurts to try. And she doesn't necessarily have to, you know, prune them all, maybe every other one, and see what the reaction of the, you know, would be from each one, every other shrub, let's put it that way.
Exactly. Maybe you could take a minute, Mike, and talk about rejuvenation pruning, because that's one of my biggest pet peeves in the gardening world, is when people take these spring-blooming shrubs like spireas and especially forsythias that bloom on last year's growth,
right,
and they try to trim them like a hedge, and they look awful, and they never bloom, and people don't realize how to properly prune these things. If you could just give a little information about that, it would help my pet peeve a lot. Thanks, Mike. I love your show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is basically what you're trying to do is you're taking a plant that's gotten, first of all, probably not really considered initially on mature size. So many people buy plant material, they never plant on maturity. But when they do get big and they don't necessarily have the space or, you know, let's say whatever it happens to be for the plant to get that big, you can. There's a couple different types of rejuvenation. You can go in and take out like a third of the, you know, the stems coming up out of the ground, leave the other two-thirds. When you make some, you know, that's what you can do. Or you can actually cut them all the way down. And it's just, to be honest with you, a lot of times it's a roll of the dice whether they're going to recover or not. There's many times that when it's been pruned that severely, they don't recover. But there's plenty of times when they do, just like with your mother. So that's what you're trying to do is you're trying to give a plant new life. It's got a great root system there, and you just kind of use that. So.
All right, let's talk to Bob and Arnold.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Mike. I got a question on hollies, fertilizer, what kind and when can I use them?
Basically, with the hollies, anything that's a broadleaf evergreen, you want to have a fertilizer that has iron and has sulfur. So you want to get fertilizer for acid-loving plants. And,
okay.
And depending upon what type of holly, I don't like to prune any kind of broadleaf evergreen going into wintertime at all. So in the springtime, before the new growth begins, let's say sometime around the Ides of March or maybe even a little bit before, start fertilizing and fertilize every month for, let's say, March, April, May, and June, and then no fertilizer after that.
Okay, but it's too late in the year to do them now, right?
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing now because you could force some growth, you know. And even though it wouldn't be obvious, you wouldn't see a bunch of new leaves or anything else coming out, but you could force the buds to be a little bit more open than they should be because of the fertilizer. And if we have a severe winter, it could really do some damage.
Okie dokie. So what was the name of what to look for, iron and...
Yeah, you want iron and sulfur in the fertilizer. So it's a fertilizer. There are all kinds of companies that make them for acid, ACID, acid-loving plants.
All righty. Appreciate it, Mike.
Yep, and it works on azaleas, rhododendrons, hollies, anything that's evergreen.
Thank you.
Yep. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, I've got my fingers crossed. I'm bringing those Moroccan goats into the country and using them to prune trees.
What are you going to call your business then?
Goats on the go? No, I can't do that.
Goats up a tree?
Yeah. Why not?
I like it. All right, let's go talk to Reed and Baldwin.
Hi, Reed.
How you doing, sir?
Very good.
I have this weed or grass, I don't know which one it is, but it grows extremely fast, extremely tall. It's a kind of a pale green at the top, and close to the root is looking like a light yellow. And I'm trying to get this out of my yard, and it's very aggressive, just taking over my yard. Can I weed and feed it?
No, because it's a grass, weed and feed only works on broadleaf plants. So in other words, grass plants, it doesn't work. It sounds like you have something called nut sedge. What you can do is just make sure that that's what it is go out and find one of these plants and just feel the stem right as it's coming out of the ground. And if it feels triangular, that's what you have. If that's the case, then you have to go to your favorite garden center and get a product called like Sedge Ender or Nut Sedge Killer or something along that line. And then you just spray it on those particular plants. And it doesn't damage the lawn or anything else. Just make sure that related to temperatures, you read the label because it may say if the temperature is above 90 degrees, we advise you not using it because it may damage your lawn. But this is what you have, and you got to get a specific herbicide for this. You can't just use a general herbicide to get it under control.
And the name of that was?
Sedge Ender, S-E-D-G-E, sedge or nut grass, that's what you have.
Okay, and so I need to get a sprayer for nut grass.
Exactly.
Thank you, sir.
All right, good luck with that. Yeah, make sure it is nut grass, but it sounds like it because nut grass is really kind of crazy stuff. It likes, moisture, so this year was perfect for it. Also, if you have a little dip in your yard, it can really get itself colonized in those spots. And it grows about twice as fast as your lawn. So you go out there and you mow your lawn. 2 days later, all of a sudden, the nut grass is 4 inches or 2 inches higher than, the rest of the lawn. It just surges.
All right, let's go talk to Peg.
Hi, Peg.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. We, 30 years ago, planted a sugar maple. And about 5 years ago, it started diminishing in its leaf production. To the point that this year it was down to maybe 10% leaf production. It looked like it was dying. So we took it out. I'm wondering, because we're going to plant another tree in its place, I'm wondering if we should check the soil before we plant to make sure that wasn't the source of the issue.
I would not think it would be the soil. If it lasted as long as it did, to me, it's just a factor like certain people, certain dogs, certain this, your couch, live or last longer than other, than another situation. So to me, this tree, for whatever reason why it went in the downhill spin, probably has nothing to do with the soil, but it wouldn't hurt to get a soil test done. And you can take that to the University of Missouri Extension Service. They have an office in Kirkwood.
Wonderful. The Missouri Extension Service. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it may be, but if it's lasted that long and just started to decline slowly, that says there's, more nature-oriented than whatever. And why this one had this problem and one across the street didn't, who knows?
Yeah. Okay, thank you, sir.
Sure.
Oh, my God. Let's talk to Harry.
Hi, Harry.
Yes, Mike. Thank you for your program. Have a butterfly, my butterfly bush. The blossoms are drying up already, and I don't know what's going on. I never did that before, and so what? I cut it back every year.
Right. My guess is, butterfly bushes, they really don't like, overly wet circumstances. So to me, all the rain in the springtime and early summer maybe diminished the root system of the butterfly bush. Didn't kill it, just diminished the root system. So consequently, it's not able to bring up enough nutrients and moisture from the soil to, for the plant to actually then use that with the leaves to make the energy so it can flower. So I would just, cut it, I would cut it halfway back right now and see if you can get some, some resetting of new flower buds and see what happens.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
One more if I can.
Sure.
I have an old walnut tree in the backyard, and I talked to you some way back, and is there a place that might take that wood, use that wood? It's really in bad shape, getting in bad shape.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I mean, so in other words, you're hoping that somebody's going to come in, want to use the walnut wood for, let's say, making furniture or whatever, and then take the tree down for pretty cheap or something along that line?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, if there's any kind of companies that it's going to do that. Let's see, where do you actually live?
Collinsville.
Collinsville. I'd go to the Illinois Extension Service and see if they may have somebody that, you know, that they know of that might do that. But I can't, you know, think of somebody myself that would help, whether you lived in Collinsville or whether you lived in Ellisville, doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, if it's a large mature tree, that you're talking multiple thousands of dollars, which I know you realize, but then these people know that too, and they don't know what the quality of the walnut's going to be, you know, until they cut it down, then, you know, plank it out and see what happens from that standpoint. So they may lose a heck of a lot of money just in general. They may make a heck of a lot of money.
I see. Okay. Well, that takes care of that situation then. Sure. Thank you very much.
Well, I greatly appreciate you having me on your show. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Well, Alex has figured out this very difficult situation, so I get to say, Mary in South County, how are you today?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry, this is Marie, but that's close enough. I'm hard
of hearing, I'm sorry.
I think I have some of that nutsedge also.
Uh-huh.
And I was told that you can't pull it. Is that correct, that it'll make it spread?
Well, that's kind of a misnomer in a way. The big, mature, you know, let's say sprigs coming up, what you can do is, the reason why they say that is because there can be nutlets, the little seeds, on the end of the white roots. And sometimes if you pull it and it's a mature plant and it actually has produced seed below the ground, then you could release those five seeds that are on those five roots. So I personally do both. I pull if it's young plants, and also then I use like the herbicide, the sedge enders, to get rid of it.
Okay. And also, is that true also with those wild violets that you can't pull them?
In theory, what happens is there's actually a seed. It's not on the end of the roots, but it's actually where the stem of the foliage and the root system meet. There's a little, like, kind of weird-looking thing that looks like, some kind of head of some kind of dinosaur or something. That could release the seeds in that situation. But if you just, you know, if you look down closely, you can see if it has that seed pod right there before you pull. And so it is in theory, but, you know, sort of making a blanket statement about either one of those things is not necessarily correct.
Okay. And do I have time for another question?
Sure.
Great. We have a evergreen, you know, that's pretty old, and it's getting big, and I don't know what kind of it has long needles on it. Is it possible to prune that, and how much and when could we do that if possible?
It sounds like an Austrian pine, but no, you really don't want to be monkeying around with pruning any kind of, let's say, plant like that, especially when you look at, let's say, it is a pine or a spruce or something. It doesn't have any needles on the inside, so it only has them on the ends of the branches, and then consequently you cut half that off, you're really causing an aesthetic problem, and you could cause a problem with the overall health, because just like leaves on deciduous trees, those needles make the food for the plant to be healthy and to stay alive, and if you cut back the needles halfway, then its chance of survival is going to be, you know, let's say, up in the air.
Oh, okay. So we shouldn't prune a pine.
No, you really shouldn't. When they're younger, yes, but when they get older, no.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much. Appreciate your info.
Sure. Thanks, Marie. And now let's go to Betty. Hi, Betty.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to have my trees pruned and the dead
branches removed.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good time of the year to have that done?
Yeah, that's fine. As far as deciduous trees, your shade trees and things like that, you could have that done. There's all kinds of tree services around the metropolitan area.
Okay, so it won't hurt the trees?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the info.
Yeah, you can either do it in the summertime, or you can do it in the wintertime when they're deciduous. Sometimes it's, you know, in some ways with deciduous trees, it helps a little bit to do it in the wintertime when there's no leaves, so the tree people can see the branching structure and everything else. But they're professionals. They can actually see it whether there's leaves on the trees or not.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let's jump over to Columbia and see what's going on with Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good morning. I planted some Pocomo crepe myrtles, I believe it was about mid-May, and they were clipping along doing really well. You know, we had a pretty rainy spring,
mm-hmm.
and then we kind of went through a little bit of a dry spell.
Right.
And I noticed that maybe I hadn't watered them enough, and they kind of, I think, got stressed. And then we had a ton of rain again just recently, and I'm not sure if they've got too much water or not enough right now. And so, like I said, they look a little stressed. They've dropped a few leaves, and I didn't know if you had any recommendations.
Well, hopefully when you planted them, you dug the hole three times the diameter of the root ball, but only 80% is deep. So, in other words, the crown of the crepe myrtle is above the surrounding ground. So if you did that, it's, you know, the acclimation process, it can take a, you know, couple years before a plant is fully acclimated to the new location, and planted properly is certainly an asset too. But I wouldn't be overly concerned or worried, as long as, if you know, the majority of the foliage is still there, and if it is and it is flowering and your plant is looking stressed out, I know you don't want to do this, but this is the first year I would say cut the flowers off, because producing flowers stresses plants out just in general, even if they're well-established and mature. Newly installed plant material, under the weather conditions we've had, the flowering could cause it more grief than good.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, the only other thing I was considering was, you know, like actually taking one out and putting it into a bucket to see if the ground... When I planted something here in the past, this soil doesn't drain particularly well, so I wasn't sure if maybe there was holding some water down here underneath this or something.
Yeah, because, I mean, well-drained soil is essential.
Okay.
And if it's not well-drained, then that's, you know, what it does is just drown the root system, and then it could cause the plant to decline. That's not to say that is what's happening, but that would be, you know, a concern, especially since you say it's a poorly drained area.
I may actually try to transplant. I have two of them. Maybe I'll try to transplant one of them to a different area. Is now a bad time to do that?
Yeah, you don't want to do it in the heat of the summertime. You want to wait until things start cooling down, maybe by late August, because the nighttime temperatures are dropping, even though the daytime temperatures may be higher. But the ground is warm, so you could do it at that time. But again, three times the diameter of the root ball, but only 80% as deep. So 20% of the root ball is going to be above the surrounding ground. That would be the way I'd plant.
Okay, great, Mike. Thank you very much.
Certainly. In a sunny location and, you know, an area that is going to be, well, you know, better drained. Let's head now to Florissant and see what's going on with Susan. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a question. I just purchased a dwarf fountain grass. It's H-A-M-E-L-N. I don't know if there's different types or not, but I'm getting ready to put that in. Do I cut that back the first year, or do I let it go till spring?
Yeah, let it go, because, you want the leaves to stay so it can, you know, get acclimated to the new location by... There's going to be probably not a whole lot, but the root system is going to uptake nutrients and moisture, send it into the blades. The blades are then going to make chlorophyll, which is food, and that will help the grass clump to get established. But don't.
Okay. And how often do you water this particular fountain grass?
You probably don't have to over. You know, if we have a period of 7 days with no rainfall at all, then go out and water it. You know, and give it a good soaking, and then don't water it again until, you know. You know,
it dries out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
overwatering. All right. You know, even with the fountain grasses, the ornamental grasses are a little bit more, let's say, able to withstand wet situations, but still you don't want to overwater.
Okay, and then so leave it in and then cut it back in the spring.
Exactly.
Okay, all right.
You know, before the new growth begins. So anytime after, you know, mid-March, you can cut it back at that time. But, you know, if hopefully that would be weird if the new growth would start before that point.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yep. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Thanks.
Yes, folks, we still have about 5 or 6 minutes, so if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Call in. You won't have to wait because we don't have any calls. Oh, I hope the intercom people don't know that I don't have any calls. I am going to have to do those tree-climbing goats, apparently. Anyway, weeds are optimistic. They're opportunistic. They germinate best in thin, weak stands of lawns. Millions of weed seeds may exist in your soil. They're not necessarily going to all germinate at the same time. Most of the seeds don't germinate because they're eaten by soil insects and microorganisms. So there's all kinds of stuff that happens that way. When conditions are right, a weed infestation can begin. And what we're talking about now, the warm season weeds are already growing. They're the ones that started growing way back in the springtime. And that includes the spurges, ragweed, purslane, knotweed, lamb's quarter, black medic, carpet weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, goosegrass, foxtail, blah, blah, blah. Now, the cool season weeds, they're the ones that germinate in late August, early September. And that you'll be putting the pre-emergent down basically mid to late August to get rid of these particular weeds, the cool season weeds. That's the henbits and the rabbit foot clover and the shepherd's purse and those kind of things, as well as the Persian speedwell. So two different, totally, completely different types of annual weeds. Now, that's not perennial weeds. This is annual weeds. So, in other words, they grow one season, and during that season, they produce seeds, drop the seeds, then they die. And you kind of forget what's going on with that. So it's a lot of work. Let's put it that way. So, let's see. Why don't we head and go to Joanne's yard? And Joanne lives in St. Louis. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing the name of this plant correctly. I think it's called Astrantia. Astraintia, I believe it is.
Okay.
I saw it in a magazine, a garden magazine, and it said it was zoned for this area. However, I have not been able to find it. And I also wondered if it's a good plant as a garden, an accent plant for a garden.
Yeah, basically it is, let's say, in theory, hardy for this region, but it's not able to sort of, let's say, acclimate to our crazy cold and hot and cold and hot and wet and dry. So it doesn't really acclimate really well to this region. Even though in theory it's supposed to be hardy for this area, it's truly not.
Okay. All right. So that's why the difficulty in finding
right,
it at
exactly.
the nurseries.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. And
bye.
Now let's go to Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hey, calling about planting replacing evergreens, their ornamental evergreens in the front of our landscape, in front of our house, and they've been browned out in the back for the past couple of years, and I want to replace them, and I'm trying to find the best time to do that. And then the second question was, I heard your caller earlier say about how the drainage has to be good, and I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, the drainage is essential for any kind of evergreen. Also, the reason why the evergreens that you're looking at, the backside is up next to your house. There's no sun there, and that's why those are brown. So just understand that that's the factor. It's not necessarily related to overall health or anything else. If the front and the top and everything else look good, the backside is always, because they're so close to the house, no sunlight's going to get there. So that you could put in some new ones, but you could end up right back to where you have right now. And in several years, it's not going to happen automatically. Or take, push the stuff further away from your house. But well-drained soil is essential. You're not having a drainage problem. You're having a problem with just the fact that there's no light hitting the backside of your shrubs.
I got you. Okay, thanks so much.
Yep. And shall we take a chance? Jim, could you do it really quickly? Oh, John.
Hello?
Yeah, could you do it quick?
Yeah. What's the best time to move and plant new hydrangeas?
Basically, you want to do it to, you know, as soon as you possibly can, as far as in the fall. So late August, early September, do it at that time. Or wait again until the springtime before the new growth begins. I prefer to do it, you know, in the fall, because the ground is warm. It helps them acclimate. Again, the hole three times the diameter of the root ball, but only 80% is deep.
Okay. And how do you get more blooms on those?
Fertilizing, and it could be an age factor. It could be a lot of, I mean, there's some spectacular ones throughout the metropolitan area. And it's just, you know, age as well as variety as well as location. They have to have a high organic, you know, content soil. That means adding compost to the soil to where you're planting. So, and yeah, it's a great day today. We've had some nice days. I mean, some days we've stepped outside in the morning. I've been surprised the other day when it was like in the 60s. But the plant material, you realize that, yeah, we are, we're experiencing this, but they are too. And so some of the plant material does well, some doesn't. You can't figure out. It's a roll of the dice, to be honest. So I admire and I, you know, tip of the trowel to everybody for trying and, you know, working, because this is probably one of the toughest regions in the entire country to grow the variety of plants we try. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a Milo's Rewards or a Milo's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it is the refreshing!
We the people of the ballpark are all in on baseball. We deserve dingers and dogs, sunshine and a beat. A place to take it all in and let it all out. Baseball for the people. Baseball is something else. Visit MLB.com/tickets and spend this summer with us. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.